Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Queercast show number 627. I'm Amy Matheny, and happy Memorial Day. Thank you to all our veterans, and especially those LGBT veterans who served in silence, who've served quietly for so many decades, and only recently have been able to serve openly and proudly as members of our community in the military community. So thank you to all of you who serve and protect our country and serve the world on this Memorial Day. I hope everybody had a great long weekend. I sure did. I felt like I kind of got caught up with myself. You know, it first of all, the weather has not changed, and we're about to launch into a week of rain in Chicago from what I hear. So, you know, there's the good news, right? Can only go up from here. But I haven't quite caught up to the fact, though, that it's almost the end of May and Gay Pride is looming. And you know, in the work that I do, it's like everything is amping up, right? And I'm sure if you're listening and if you have kids, then the kids are getting out of school. So that's amping up. Or, you know, if you're in this party scene and you really love to go out and do things, it's like your calendar is starting to get so, so full because despite the rain, you know, the calendar is still moving and events are still happening and benefits and festivals and all of this stuff that becomes the farmers markets have opened and perhaps you're out and just the world is just kind of starting to buzz, right? Especially in the Midwest, especially in a big city like Chicago. And perhaps you're thinking about summer travel. So you're kind of thinking of like getting geared up to take some time off or I don't know. It's just like there's so many things. I was saying to my girlfriend the other night, I said, gosh, it feels a little like there's just a lot that's going to happen in the next 30 days. And that is true. That is at least true in my life. And maybe you all feel that as well. But I'm excited about our show today. And I also have a big announcement today. And so two things are gonna happen here on this last weekly show of the month of May, the lusty month of May, as is said in the musical Camelot. First of all, we are going to be talking with a Brit, handsome devil he is. James Dawson is an author and his and a teacher and an activist and absolutely an ally of our community as well as a member of our community who has seen that it is imperative that we give back to our younger generation, that we mentor young LGBT people. And how he has done this recently is with his new book, This Book is Gay. And a friend of mine that I've known for like 20 years who I used to know in Tennessee, and then she moved to Chicago, and she works with a publishing company. And she said, hey, you know, there's this book that's come out that we're really championing, and I thought of you and thought maybe you could have him on the show because he's charming and wonderful. And so I was like, yes, connect us. And so connecting over the pond, so to speak, with James today on the show about This Book Is Gay, which is really just a book I think we all wish we had when we were coming out, growing up as LGBT people. It does not talk down to individuals or members of our community, but it is a great YA or young adult book. And at the same time, it's a great adult book because people are coming out at all different kinds of ages, or people are, you know, finding out based on protections and, like we just mentioned with the military, but also state to state. States are passing more and more anti-discrimination, and maybe people are just feeling like they can live a little more out and proud and open with their lives. And this book is really a great reference and guidebook. Fun to read, easy to read. But dense with information and really things that you think, wow, nobody ever really talks about that. So I'm psyched to have him on. It's kind of a perfect precursor to Gay Pride Month. And so James Dawson on the show. Plus, we have tons of news on what's going on in the theater scene. And I guess I should also say happy IML Leather Daddies and Bear Boys and women, I should say, guys and girls. Let's not be sexist. But IML is just, it's such a fun weekend and there's so much going on. And it really does feel like we're tipping our hat here to June and looking forward to the next month. And so at this time, I wanted to make a big announcement, which is, first of all, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had this big interview with Tracy Baim about our 30th anniversary of Windy City Times. And this year is all about our campaign toward that. And it's a super, super exciting time. And also, I'm kind of coming up on almost 15 years with the company and over 18 years in working in gay radio and gay podcasting. And so I have a big announcement about that, which I'm going to make at the end of the show. So I hope that you will stay tuned and listen through to the end today. And I'll be talking about it in the upcoming weeks as well. But today is really the big announcement day. So stay tuned. I'm going to break and tell you what's going on in the news. We'll be back with James and then the big announcement. All right. Keep your ears plugged in.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
In Eureka Springs, Arkansas, the vote to maintain Ordinance 2223 was overwhelmingly passed by 71%. The ordinance prohibits discrimination against anyone based on sexual orientation or gender identity and provides anti-discrimination protection in employment, housing, and public accommodations. It goes into effect in July.
The engineer involved in the May 12th Amtrak train crash in Pennsylvania has been identified as gay activist Brandon Bastian, a 32-year-old resident of Queens, New York. Bastian suffered a concussion in the accident and cannot remember what happened when the train jumped the tracks, killing 7 people and injuring more than 200.
A lesbian activist and student was murdered April 17th in her off-campus home near the University of Mary Washington in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Grace Rebecca Mann, age 20, was found strangled shortly after she participated in Day of Silence, an annual international event on campus GLSEN created more than a decade ago. Fredericksburg police have charged one of Mann's 3 housemates with first-degree murder and abduction in connection with her death.
Missouri authorities claim that a champion college wrestler recklessly infected gay sex partners with HIV for months after he was diagnosed. Michael Johnson, 23, allegedly continued to hook up with multiple men in his Lindenwood University dorm room, even lying to them when asked if he had the virus. Johnson, who won the 2012 National Junior College Championship before transferring to Lindenwood, infected 2 men and endangered 4 others before his October 2013 arrest, according to the felony charges.
The first federally approved monument honoring LGBT veterans was dedicated on Memorial Day at the Abraham Lincoln National Cemetery in Elmwood, Illinois, just 1 hour south of Chicago.
In Wyoming, the Laramie City Council approved a local anti-discrimination ordinance 17 years after gay student Matthew Shepard's death took place in that same town. The council voted 7-2 in favor of the measure that bans discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in housing, employment, and access to public facilities, such as restaurants. Shepard's death was considered a watershed in the gay rights movement, resulting in a national hate crimes measure.
GlaxoSmithKline and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill are teaming up to form a company to look for a cure for AIDS. The two partners will form Quara Therapeutics. The partnership also creates an HIV cure center, bringing together academic and pharmaceutical research scientists.
In Texas, time expired on a bill that would prohibit government employees from issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples, thwarting state Republicans' plans to defy the U.S. Supreme Court if same-sex marriage is legalized. Republicans had until midnight on May 15th to pass the measure in the Texas House, which they control. However, the bill never even reached a vote, as Democrats used stall tactics to keep the bill at the back of the line.
The Nevada legislature has passed an omnibus anti-bullying measure that Governor Brian Sandoval supported. Assembly members voted 36-6 to approve SB 504. The measure now heads to Sandoval's desk for final approval. The bill revises the definition of bullying and creates a separate anti-bullying office within the Nevada Department of Education. It also strengthens reporting requirements for bullying incidences and creates a 24-hour hotline and website for submitting complaints.
And Susan DiPrizio, a 40-year-old minister who tried to perform a same-sex wedding in an Alabama courthouse, has pled guilty to disorderly conduct. A judge ordered her to pay a $250 fine and suspended her 30-day jail sentence.
In Eflin, North Carolina, some Eflin Cheeks Elementary School parents were upset after a third-grade teacher read the book King and King about a prince marrying another prince. Teacher Omar Curie, who did not notify parents as the Orange County School's controversial topics policy requires, read the book in order to address the bullying of a boy in his class.
In world news, Scotland is the best country in Europe for LGBTI legal equality, according to the 2015 Rainbow Europe Index. The annual index measures progress in European countries on LGBTI equality against 48 criteria, including legal protections from discrimination in work and services, measures to tackle hate crime, rights and recognition for transgender and intersex people, and equality in family law. Scotland meets 92% of the criteria.
The Supreme Court of Costa Rica has upheld a ruling that professional associations may not discriminate against people who are in same-sex relationships.
Two gay youths, 18 and 20, have been arrested in Taiwan after a video of them having oral sex on a train went viral online. After the video went viral last month, the Taiwan Railway Administration reported the incident to the police, who were able to track down the two youths by analyzing their facial features in the video.
A Planet Romeo survey says that worldwide, 4 million gay men were a victim of serious physical violence in 2014. The survey questioned 115,000 men from 127 countries.
In a speech about the nation's youth, the president of Gambia has threatened to slit the throats of gay people living in the country. He made the chilling threat apparently in response to Western leaders who have criticized the nation's regressive attitude to homosexuality. The dictator's comments were the latest in a long line of shockingly anti-gay comments.
Following the recent election, the UK now has more lesbian, gay, or bisexual members of parliament than anywhere in the world. The Westminster House of Commons now has 32 MPs who openly identify as LGB. There are no transgender MPs out of 650, making up 4.9% of parliament.
In entertainment news, Starz Digital has picked up the rights to Robin Williams' last film, Boulevard. The film sees Williams as married but closeted Nashville bank manager Nolan Mack, whose life is forever changed when he picks up a young hustler named Leo, played by Roberto Aguirre. However, instead of paying Leo for his body, Nolan just wants some of his time and companionship. Boulevard had its world premiere at the 2014 Tribeca Film Festival to positive reviews. The film opens July 17th.
For the second season of its mega hit new series Empire, Chris Rock, Alicia Keys, and Lenny Kravitz have been signed to appear. The debut season landed talents like Snoop Dogg, Jennifer Hudson, Gladys Knight, and Mary J. Blige.
Two male models have become the first openly gay couple to sign with Fusion Models. John Tweet, 22, and Carlos Santolaya, 25, go by the portmanteau Jarlos, and have already earned a following in the modeling world and in New York City's party scene. Although the fashion industry may seem very accepting of gay people, the couple explained that models are still expected to appear masculine or androgynous.
Todd Haynes' romantic drama Carol premiered at Cannes to rave reviews. In the film, based on Patricia Highsmith's erotic novel The Price of Salt, Rooney Mara's Therese falls head over heels for an older married woman played by Kate Blanchett in a loveless marriage in New York circa 1950. Speaking of Blanchett, she revealed to Variety that she had been in same-sex relationships many times. When asked if this is her first turn as a lesbian, Blanchett said, on film or real life. However, the actress later said that she hasn't had any sexual relations with a woman.
Legendary performer Bette Midler's first major tour in a decade, Divine Intervention, has launched. With shows starting in Hollywood and Tampa, Florida, she is slated to appear in other cities, such as Chicago, of course, Denver, Boston, Las Vegas, London, and more.
Taye Diggs returns to Broadway this summer in the hit musical Hedwig and the Angry Inch, taking over the lead from Darren Criss. Diggs previously starred on Broadway in Rent and Wicked, both alongside ex-wife Idina Menzel. He hasn't been on Broadway since January of 2004.
The WNBA has suspended All-Stars and married couple Brittany Griner and Glory Johnson for 7 games each after their domestic violence arrests in April. The two were arrested on suspicion of assault after a fight in the home they recently bought. They were married recently in Phoenix.
Following the extravagant footsteps of Celine Dion, Shania Twain, Britney Spears, and Mariah Carey, Jennifer Lopez announced a run of shows at the Planet Hollywood Axis Theater in Vegas beginning in January.
And Young and the Restless actor Greg Rickart married his longtime love, TV writer Robert Suddus, in Maui. The Emmy winner has revealed that he hopes Young and the Restless will have his character Kevin come out of the closet. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey guys, this is Miss Cleo. I want you to listen to Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Kaweer.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of May 25th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Lifeline Theater concludes its 32nd season of Big Stories Up Close with Soon I Will Be Invincible, a world premiere musical based on the 2007 superhero novel by Austin Grossman. Runs May 29th through July 19th. More at lifelinetheater.com. Don't miss the exciting musical premiere, Soon I Will Be Invincible.
Hubbard Street Dance celebrates Chicago's world-renowned choreographer Alejandro Cerruto with a thrilling summer season. The program features audience favorites and the world premiere of his newest creation. Hubbard Street's summer series runs June 11th through 14th at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance in Millennium Park. Get the best seats now at hubbardstreetdance.com/summer. Tickets start at just $25 and are going fast.
Experience the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Doubt, a riveting story of suspicion, ambiguity, and religion, staged by Writers Theater in the Glencoe Union Church. Explosive and riveting, a genuine stunner, says the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Chicago Tribune says Karen James Wodich gives one of the best performances of the year. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org. Don't miss Doubt at Writers Theater, just minutes from downtown Chicago on the Edens or the Metro. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueercast.com.
I wonder, wonder who wrote the book of life.
I'm
What if there was a book that answered it all for you? Right when you were coming out, getting to know yourself, falling in love with someone of the same sex, wanting to lose your virginity, needing to know the lingo for the LGBT community as its newest member, and seeking some insight on this path of an ever-changing world of gay culture. Well, James Dawson has provided just that book, that guide, that compass. And it is a wonderful resource for young adult readers and adults alike. It's called This Book is Gay. Hailed as one of the best books of the year by The Guardian, it's a book we all wish we had when we were young. And I am just thrilled to have James on the show. Hey, James, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I am good. Now, tell me where you're calling us from.
Presently, I'm at home in London, England.
In London, England. Are you from London originally?
I'm not, no. I'm actually from a very small town up north that I don't think anybody would have heard of. It's called Bradford, and it's kind of famous because it's where Scary Spice and Zayn Malik from One Direction came from.
Mm. Well, that's obviously something that we can all relate to. You obviously have your finger on the pop culture pulse. You've been born in the birthplace of Scary Spice and a One Direction member, so that almost makes you deified, I believe.
We should say former One Direction member.
Yeah, the former. It's like Prince, the artist formerly known as. So, I mean, well, first of all, I've got to say, is it exciting there with a new royal being born? I was kind of hoping for the name Alice, but I'll go with the name Charlotte. That's kind of exciting.
I think I'm not going to lie. It kind of passed us by. We've just had a big general election, and that has kind of been the big news. I think it would be fair to say it hasn't quite gone the way we would have liked it to have gone. So unfortunately, baby Charlotte has been slightly overshadowed by a change in parliament.
Yeah, a changing parliament. What's going on for LGBT Londoners? We rarely have a Londoner on the show to kind of say, like, what's going on in the political sector there, and how is it impacting your community?
I think it will. I think it will greatly. I mean, I'm not going to say that all LGBT people vote for Labour or the Lib Dems or the Green Party, but I don't think this is the first time we've lived under a Conservative government for about 20 years. And the clue's in the name. They are the Conservative government. Their track record with LGBT issues historically has been very poor. They introduced a lot of legislation that massively impacted on my childhood, a piece of legislation called Section 28 that forbade teachers from talking about homosexual lifestyles. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that massively impacted on my education because teachers weren't allowed to talk about being gay. Many, many Conservative MPs voted against gay marriage. It was actually up to Labour and Lib Dem politicians to actually get that legislation through. So obviously now we've got Conservative government. They have the majority, and I don't know. It's hard not to feel a bit despondent about the future, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, we've seen a lot of the conservatism pushing back against one of your neighboring countries in France. And do you feel like because we're progressing so quickly globally as a community, or it feels like it's happening suddenly, we know that it's not. It's been lots and lots and lots of little efforts by LGBT people around the world that this change is coming to many of us. But are you feeling like there in Europe that the pushback is starting to come from the conservative voices?
At the moment, and I will say this, David Cameron, who is the Prime Minister, he has been a vocal advocate for gay rights. And I think actually at the risk of upsetting his own party, he's supported gay rights. The worry at the moment for me, it's in right-wing thinking in general. At the moment in Europe, we're having a lot of issues and a lot of very negative feelings around sort of immigration and migrants and this idea of whether or not the UK is going to opt in or out of Europe. And at the moment, so there's a lot of bad feeling about migrants, but I think it's about scapegoating. And right now, the right-wing press is scapegoating one minority group. And actually, it feels like a matter of time before actually the attention swings back onto our minority group. Yeah. And that's why I worry.
Yeah, well, have you always, I mean, you're talking about the climate and the culture that you grew up in where, you know, being schooled and you couldn't even mention the word gay or talk about gay issues. Was that why you decided to write this book? I mean, how did this book Is Gay come about? What was kind of the ember that started it all?
Well, I'll be really honest. It actually wasn't my idea in the first place. I'd written previously a sex education book for young men called Being a Boy. And the publisher came to me and said, how would you feel about writing a follow-up called sort of Being a Gay? And I was like, well, A, we're absolutely not calling it that because that's awful. And B, I said no, because I felt as a white, middle-class gay man, I wasn't in any position to speak on behalf of gay women or bisexual people, or trans people, or gay people of colour, or gay people with disabilities. So I said no. But then I was lying in bed one night, and the title kind of came to me, obviously that sort of play on words, and sort of reclaiming something that had been quite negative. Yes. And I thought, yes, oh, that's quite good. And I'd be upset if they asked somebody else to do it. So I went back to my editor and I said, what if I kind of did it as almost more of a collection of other people's ideas? So what if I went out and interviewed lots of different people, trans people and bi people and gay women, so it wasn't just all my ideas? And they let me run with it, that they let me go off and do it. But I think absolutely the starting point was everything I wish I had known when I was 14. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of almost it, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I think we can all identify with. And when reading your book and looking at your book, I really thought, wow, you know, I just remember, because I don't think I identified as lesbian until I was in my late teens or 20. And, you know, they say women sometimes are later to the awareness, just because for whatever reason, women can have more affection with one another. Societally, it's potentially more acceptable for women to be in kind of close confidants with one another, and perhaps just, you know, whatever, the way puberty impacts us and everything. But I remember trying to mine from as many different locations and resources, and I know many of you listeners can't believe this, but this is before cell phones and texting and the internet and the web and all of that. And so you're looking for clues and you're looking to mine all of the data that I feel you compromised, you know, that's kind of composed in this book and that you've compiled into this book. So did you go out and interview young people, old people? I mean, what was your process to create the outline and create the data for this book Is Gay?
In the first case, I think the first thing I did, because I wrote this about 18 months ago now. So I think the first thing I did was I did a big survey and sent out this questionnaire all around the world just to generate some data and to try find out, you know, other people's experience and what was your sex education at school like, and that sort of stuff. And I was massively helped by a big American author called Maureen Johnson, helped to share the questionnaire. And so quite quickly, I think I had about 700-800 people respond. And it was quite a nice split, actually. It was about, I think, 60% women, 40% men, all around the world. It was really cool to hear from some people who were in countries where being in a same-sex relationship is still illegal. So that helped me to get some really good data. And then what I did was I just looked at all those questionnaires and picked out some characters who I thought would be interesting to talk to further. And so, yeah, I did want to make sure there was a nice split of some trans people and some bi people and some gay people. So I did try to do it that a little bit. But moreover, I really just wanted to speak to people who sounded like they might have an interesting story. And that was how I went about sort of harvesting the people.
And were you really looking for this to be targeted, that it would be digestible for young readers? And if so, how did you assess what was the right tone for the book? Like how, you know, what your vocabulary would be and how you would access a wider audience that might be reading the book?
Again, I'm going to be super honest with you. Initially, I thought my publisher was a bit mad because I wouldn't personally have dared to pick up this book Is Gay when I was 13, because it's a very out book, kind of, and you can't really hide it. And so I thought, well, who's going to buy this? But then I sort of, when I got into it, I sort of started to realize that time when I was a bit older and I was sort of 16, 17, and I had come out. And actually my identity was very much at the forefront of my mind, and it was something I thought about a lot. And so I kind of thought, right, if this book is written for anyone, it's written for a young LGBT person who is very much at that sort of first flush of celebrating their identity, mm-hmm. and then maybe sort of celebrating just coming out and being able to be open about it. But at the same time, after it came out and I started to see it in the UK, our biggest bookshop is called Waterstones, which is kind of, I guess, the equivalent to Barnes & Noble. When I started seeing it in Waterstones, I realised it almost didn't matter that a 12, 13-year-old might not be brave enough to read it yet. It's enough that they can see that this is a book that's in the young adult section of a bookshop. And they know it's there for them. I think it's almost enough to know it's there. And I think you're right. As a young LGBT person, you're so switched on to clues in the media. And I think for a young LGBT person, seeing that book on a bookshelf sends out a very positive message, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And we should say that the book and the picture of the book is in our show notes. You know, it's rainbow colored. It looks like a fun book you want to pick up. I mean, jacket covers matter. But also looking in the book, the way you've divided up certain sections, I mean, this is a very current book. It is very much speaking to what's going on right now. It has its finger on the pulse right now. It is also divided up into different sections. So I'm assuming that some of these categories or topics in which you wanted to discuss were elevated from these surveys and these interviews that you did. You know, you are going to talk about sex. You are going to talk about coming out. You are going to talk about you call it the haters gonna hate, little tip of your hat to Taylor Swift. But, you know, talking about, you know, whether it's how to defend yourself, it just, I think, gives you context and categories for, you know, Bible quotes and religious perspectives or challenges that we may face. Talk about some of those areas and chapters of the book. I'd rather you kind of talk about them and what was interesting to you and necessary for you to present.
I think because nonfiction, I also write fiction, but nonfiction's really easy because you kind of pitch the project to your editor without having written a word. And so I did sort of very broadly divide it into three kind of sections, which was identity, sex education, and living as an LGBT person. Mm-hmm. And so once it had been sort of divided into those sort of three sections, it became just a question of what do I want to include. I think you've already mentioned my favourite chapter, which is the one about marrying up religious beliefs with your identity. I went into, I think, writing that chapter thinking that, you know, they were incompatible and that, you know, it would be very difficult to be a person of faith who was also LGBT. But A, I managed to find, you know, plenty of people of faith who were willing to talk to me about how they manage both parts of their life. But also as well, you know, I guess I'd sort of always grown up thinking, ooh, it's in the Bible or ooh, it's in the Quran. And actually, for the first time, I actually sat down and I tracked down the relevant parts of the faith books and actually realized there's not really a lot in there. So actually what was really fun about this project was that I was learning as I was writing as well.
Well, and you also in each section, you continue to tip your hand back to those real voices of real people, not that you're not real, but other real people and real voices, who shared their thoughts. Talk about using that, using different real people and their quotes and what they said in the book.
It was really important that it was real people. I think there was about a minute at the very beginning of the project where I thought it would be really fun to round up some famous LGBT people. But then I thought, actually, we've kind of heard it all before. We've kind of heard every famous gay person tell their coming out story on some chat show. And actually, so I wanted to speak to real people. And I think that real people are always unguarded in a way that maybe celebrities aren't. Mm-hmm. And also, again, it was, for me, it was the only way this project would be valid, was that if it wasn't just, oh, here's a guy just giving us his opinion about my life and he knows nothing about my life. So it was really important that to present points and then sort of and get a bit of debate going as well. You know, there's sections in there, there's like pro Grindr, against Grindr, there's pro open relationships, against open relationships. So it was nice to get a bit of debate going in there as well. And also, I'm really, really lucky in that I'm surrounded by people who were funny. So I think very often a lot of the testimonials are really hilarious as well.
Absolutely. And did you feel a responsibility when talking about sex, knowing that this book was, going to be something that young people were going to gravitate toward, or new people, at whatever age, to having a same-sex relationship? I mean, really, the thing that makes us different, the thing that truly has, you know, your parliament debating about it, our U.S. Supreme Court debating about it, is who we choose to have sex with. That's really what we're talking about here. And so, but for a young person, gay or straight sex, it's still new and it's scary and it's, you're unsure. And talk about, you know, setting the tone for that and what was essential for you to include about the sexual life, the sexual health of an LGBT person.
I think I wanted it to be frank as well as funny. I sort of, some schools deliver phenomenal sex education, and we're talking both straight and gay here. But I kind of went in assuming, what if somebody like me who received very poor sex education, I felt it was more important to really sort of go there and be explicit than it was to pretend it wasn't happening. And I worked with young people for a really long time. I worked with 11-year-olds, and I think you'd be very surprised what some of the 11-year-olds came out with. We as adults will never know what it is like to have high-speed internet on our phones when we were 10 years old. Because we cannot go back in time. We can't go back and know what it is like to grow up with that kind of access to pornography. And that's reality. So we can either burn the world down and deny that that's happening, or we can actually adjust and we can, what's the word I'm looking for? We can sort of scaffold around young people to make sure that they are protected and to make sure that they are able to separate what is sex education from what is pornography. And so again, it's in quite a humorous style, I like to think, but I sort of wanted to make sure that both boys and girls sort of had the basics. And when you look at statistics surrounding HIV acquisition, young gay men are still far, far more likely to acquire HIV than their straight counterparts. And why is that happening? I can only assume it's just because sex education just isn't good enough, and we're not empowering young people to have conversations about contraception, and we're not empowering young people to have conversations around saying no or explaining what it is and isn't that they want. This is something that I'm hugely passionate about, and it's a real political issue here. At the moment, again, under the Conservative government, it's hugely unlikely that we're going to get mandatory sex education in schools, and that's a real downer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, not only do you, I mean, you have diagrams, I mean, you talk about just the basics of how men have sex with men and women have sex with women, and also, you know, everything you're talking about now, helping young people be informed and empowered on STDs and HIV. But you also then talk about the deeper aspect of what it means to be in a relationship. And I believe that's a part of sex education as well. Yes. And it seems like that was an important point for you to make, too, without putting a morality on it.
Yeah, I think what schools do quite well, in the most part, is the birds and the bees. I don't think too many children leave school not knowing how babies are made and how babies are born. But actually, for me, what I'm really interested in is that relationship side of it. What I want, and, you know, certainly the early part of my 20s were really blighted by really bad, jealous, paranoid relationships. And again, that's because, you know, nobody had ever taught me how it was a relationship goes. Nobody had ever taught me, how do you break up with someone in the appropriate way? How do you meet someone? Where do you meet someone? And how do you make it work? I still don't claim to have all the answers. I sit here, a single man in his 30s. But at the end of the day, you know, this is, I guess, passing on what I've learned from the various car crashes I've been involved in.
Yeah, and do you, well, you're very handsome. You're a very handsome young man in your 30s, so I don't think you'll be single long if you don't want to be.
Well, but that's, it's about the wanting to be, isn't it? And it's about recognizing when a relationship is right for you and not just going blindly into a relationship, which, yeah.
What was the biggest surprise? What was the biggest surprise? Like you said, you write fiction, you forge ahead to write this, you know, nonfiction book. You interview tons of people of different ages from 11 on up. What was the surprise? What is the thing that you're like, I don't exactly know what I'm going to write until I talk with all these people and I gather all this information. What was the big surprising takeaway for you of This Book Is Gay?
Me, I think, and I think this is very much a generational thing, it was the difference in outlook between people my age, sort of the guys and girls in their early 30s, and then speaking to the teenagers. What was really lovely about the teenagers was they have such hope. I think because if we're talking in general, because the society is a little bit more accepting now than it was in the 80s and 90s, the difference, there was just a difference in sort of tone and sort of young people perhaps having not had to struggle quite as much. And that's a wonderful thing. But just in the difference as well with the way that young people, for example, saw Grindr, which is a dating app, and they were just, oh, no, you know, it's not for us, it's for older people. And they were very much about sort of Tumblr and Twitter and meeting people online in different ways. And so there were some practical differences, but also, I guess, some sort of quite sort of fundamental attitude differences as well. That was really lovely. It far, far more young people coming forward and using words like queer and pansexual as well, far more reluctant to just accept that there are only four labels you can have. And a lot of talk about being gender fluid or sexually fluid. And I think that's wonderful because, you know, why do we need to pigeonhole people the way we do?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that that's where we're moving, right? It's like the conversation that was happening for LGBT young people here in the States of gay straight alliances and clubs within high schools, you know, was kind of the big question early on. Then, like, I want to take my boyfriend or girlfriend to the prom. Then it became more complicated conversations about, like, which bathroom do I want to use? Do I feel comfortable using? And I've been really, really compelled myself over a number of years, more than a decade and a half of interviewing and talking with LGBT people on the radio or on the world of podcasting, you know, just how rapidly this conversation and how deep this conversation has gone for young people around sexual identity and gender identity. It kind of blows my mind, honestly. As somebody who actually is in their early 40s, so I'm a little older than you, to hear the conversations that, you know, are coming out of young people, and also to just see some of the quotes and things that, you know, the confidence and perspective from some of the young people in This Book Is Gay as well.
I think as well, I mean, it has to be the internet. It's definitely social media. Growing up near Bradford, I could well have been the only gay in the village. Whereas had I had the internet in my bedroom, I would have immediately been connected to thousands and thousands of other people and been able to enter into a conversation about my sexuality far, far earlier. And I think providing a kind of support that I didn't have. And I think, so while it's earlier on, I was sort of quick to demonize the effects of the internet, I think for the LGBT community, there's been a hugely positive impact as well.
So for you, has there been a huge positive impact from being this young gay boy in this small, you know, British town who couldn't hear or talk about, gay topics, to being a grown man who has really focused and devoted his life and his art and his career on talking about adolescence and writing for young people. I mean, is that really your passion? I mean, you've written a number of best-selling young adult novels, which have been translated. You, as you mentioned earlier, this book was kind of a spinoff, if you will, or a sequel to Being a Boy, your successful book that you wrote a couple years ago for sex and puberty in young men. I mean, I have friends here. I have a very good friend here who always says, you know, I'm a 14-year-old girl trapped in a, you know, a 40-year-old gay man's body. But are you forever young if you keep a foot in this world of adolescence and young adults?
I think so. I mean, it's really one for the therapist, isn't it? Which is why
I was actually lying you back on a couch. Did you notice how I did that very gently, James?
And I'm ready to share now. It's been a breakthrough. I think, there is something quite irresistible about sort of adolescence. I think it's more than any other period in our lives. It's when we undergo huge change. It's very much where our identity goes from being this, you are a son or a daughter, and then you kind of mold yourself and you kind of create yourself out of those teenage years. And I find that really fascinating. And certainly a lot of my sort of novels have a theme of transformation in that sort of like starting out as one thing and ending up as another. And I think this book is gay is no different, really. It's about finding your place in the world. But then the last chapter actually tells you, right, well, what else is there? You know, you are far more than just your sort of sexual or gender identity. You know, what are you good at? What are your talents? What are your skills? You know, what do you want your career to be? What kind of politics do you have? So it's about sort of moving, I guess, people on into adulthood as well once their identity is figured out. But for me, I don't know if it helps keep me young. Although in my head, I'm still about 23, which is literally 10 years out. But it's about, I guess, trying to help. And I know, you know, I guess a therapist would probably say that I'm trying to, in many ways, rescue myself from what was a really dark period of my life, actually. Yeah. But, you know, it's nice to do a bit of helping. You know, what kind of adult do I want to be? Do I want to be somebody who just writes sort of best-selling, very commercial novels, or do I actually want to try write books that might help young people shine a bit of light on what's going on in their lives as well?
Well, and it sounds like, you know, through this book, you are going to become a role model and a voice for so many young LGBT queer kids. Did you have role models that you were looking toward, or is that something that you feel a responsibility to be a role model or a voice or a mentor or a guide for young people today?
I think for me, when I was younger, because there were so few LGBT role models, and there certainly weren't any that I really identified with, actually I looked to my friends as role models. My best friend Kerry, who is still my best friend, you know, she was bisexual, she was an out bisexual at school, and had the kind of confidence that I, you know, could have only dreamed of. Whereas now I think that young people are more fortunate to have people in the public eye. I think authors, whether we like it or not, the second our books come out, especially if we're children's or young adult authors, we become role models. And I've had this conversation a lot. In fact, I've argued quite strongly with some other authors who feel that they have no responsibility to their readership and no responsibility to be role models. Whereas I'm like, nobody asked any of us to write these books. We've chosen to put them out there. We've chosen to be part of a conversation with young adults. So I do feel a responsibility. But similarly, I also think one of the most important lessons we can learn as role models is that role models get things wrong and we make mistakes and we are humans and we are allowed to go wrong because it's about how you make right and it's about how you apologize. So while on one hand, you know, I accept I'm a role model, I don't think that means I have to be perfect.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great that you have just lent your voice continually for young people and gone out there and helped excavate these stories and presented them to us. It's a great book. I will say, as we head into Gay Pride Month here in Chicago and in the U.S., I mean, it is a great book to If you're a teacher listening, it's a great book to have on your library shelf. If you are a therapist, it's definitely a book to get. If you are a young person listening to this Queercast, you know, download it onto your Nook or your Kindle. It's a great book. And as an adult, too. I mean, it's just... you will be entertained by it. It is funny. It is smart. It is very clear. And I already, as I was prepping for the interview this week and got your book, I was like, wow, I know so many people that I want to share this book with, either a parent of a young LGBT person or an LGBT young person or a person who may not even identify as anything yet. It's kind of great. I don't think anybody ever says, so when did you know you were straight? So it's kind of great to, have this perspective, because all of this knowledge helps show us how we're all alike. And in so many ways, I read this book going, I bet there are a lot of straight kids who wish they had somebody who would write to them in this tone and this voice. About just how to navigate being a young person in 2015. So, I can't think of a better person to be doing that than you, James. So if folks want to follow James, his website is jamesdawsonbooks.com. I'm sure you can get this book on Amazon and probably download it to your Kindle, right? Or is it available on Kindle?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'm going to be in New York as well doing some events throughout June. So the hashtag to look for is openly YA. I'm doing some events in New York City with David Levithan. So obviously that's not going to cover all of America, but if you do happen to be in the Manhattan or New Jersey area, where I'm going to be first week.
Yeah, and you need to come to Chicago too, I'm sure, but that'll be great. We have listeners in New York for sure who will come out. So, definitely you can follow James there. And if you're out on the Twitter, verse, you can go to @_JamesDawson, look James up and follow him there as well. The book is called This Book Is Gay. And James Dawson, I just so appreciate getting to chat with you, and I wish you much success and happy Pride.
Thank you. Happy Pride to you as well.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you'll pick up the book. I hope you're ready to launch into this Gay Pride Month. And I need to make an announcement to all of you loyal listeners. After 18 years of doing gay radio and podcasting and almost, I guess, almost a decade of the Windy City Queercast, the Queercast is going to be changing. And for now, I will not be hosting weekly podcasting shows. As you all have come to know, usually you get a fresh new podcast every week from me, kind of giving you something in the world of news and entertainment and what's going on in world news and theater. And, you sit on a couch, you hear me sit on a couch with friends and co-hosts and people that we have come to get to know. But it has become time for me to focus my life in some other areas. I have a partner today, and there are children in my life, and my family is all back in Tennessee, and I've been traveling back there quite a bit, and I am excited to continue my efforts with Windy City Media and Windy City Times. Still, I will still be working for the paper, but the Queercast, as you have come to know it, almost these past 10 years, will be ending at the end of June. My hope over these next 4 weeks is that we get to look back a little bit at the end of each show and also just keep programming wonderful shows. We're going to be talking about the Tony Awards coming up. I'm going to have Scott Duff back for that. Hopefully we're going to get a shout out from Mitchell Fain on his cruise ship. Hopefully maybe I'll get a call in from a couple of other former co-hosts and people that can give us a chat and give us a shout out. But my hope is that one of our last shows will be the Supreme Court decision coming back on same-sex marriage in the U.S. And that feels to me like a full circle moment, for me in the world of LGBT radio, starting this work in 97, 98 on Les by Gay Radio, and with early on talking about the case in Hawaii, watching Massachusetts legalize marriage with Windy City Radio when we first went on FM radio as a part of Windy City Times family, and then for us to sign off with the Supreme Court decision. Now, does that mean that the story is over for LGBT people and our story in news and entertainment? Absolutely not. I mean, marriage is not the end-all, be-all conversation for us as a community. I've been saying that for a year, but it is a significant conversation, and I feel like I can close that conversation, hopefully, and wrap it up. And then let somebody else spark a new conversation with you through the LGBT community. Of course, I will still be working hard with Windy City Times. I'm so honored to be a part of that team and our 30th anniversary there, where we're going to have a party in September at Sidetrack, as you heard with Tracy Baim. And we are currently doing an Indiegogo campaign, which I hope many of you will go to Indiegogo.com and search Windy City Times and help us with a gift of $30. A $30 donation helps maybe a dollar for per year that Windy City Times has been free to the world, mostly to the Chicago community. That will really help us support our writers' fund and support the people who contribute to the paper on a weekly basis. But so, you know, hey, David Letterman signs off. It feels like it's time for me to sign off. I don't know why. Dave and I feel linked somehow. I'm sure Drew Barrymore at least flashed her tits to me in a dream at some point during my gay life. But this is not the end, so I don't want to wrap it up. But I do want to say I love all of you guys for listening. I do know those of you who send those weekly tweets or posts to me, or Facebook posts have become my Facebook friend, and the doorbell is ringing. So I am going to go and say we've still got some good weeks, folks. So stay tuned. Next week is one of the most important podcasts I've ever done. I am so excited. Stay tuned next week and see what that is, because I cannot wait. I love you all, and I will talk with you soon. Till next week. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.